Good morning. The Insurance and Banking Subcommittee will come to order. Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair DeSegley.
Here.
Vice Chair Haig. Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite.
Here.
Representatives Barnaby.
Here.
Beltran.
Here.
Brown. Driscoll. Fabricio.
Here.
Fetterhoff.
Here.
Hardy.
Here.
Coster.
Here.
Rayner.
Here.
Robinson. C. Smith.
Here.
D. Smith.
Here.
Snyder.
Here.
Toledo.
Here.
Zika.
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Let the record reflect that a quorum is present. Before we begin our meeting, a few reminders. I will ask everyone to please remember to silence your electronic devices. Also, as a reminder for our members, please ensure that you turn on your microphone when you're speaking, including when you vote, and off when you are finished. So I want to welcome everybody back today. Happy St. Patrick's Day. They say everybody's Irish today, but I'm still Italian, so that's good news. We have four bills on our agenda today. And so we will go ahead and get right to it. Members, we will now take up House Bill 305, Property Insurance Claims and Reimbursement by Representative Rommel. And members, I want to just explain really briefly that we have a strike-all amendment. The relating to clause has changed. Therefore, per House rules, the bill, if the amendment is adopted, is going to be temporarily postponed. So I just wanted to lay that out before Representative presents the bill. So with that, Representative Rommel, you are recognized to give us a brief explanation of your bill before we take up the strike-all amendment. You are recognized.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, members. I know this is a little bit different with this new procedure. When a strike-all is filed at 6 o'clock the day before, the reason is that, so, you know, after today, assuming that we adopt the amendment, you all have time to come and see me, stakeholders come time to see me to make sure that we totally understand the bill. Right now, we know our property and casualty rates are rising. There is a crisis here in Florida. The intent of the bill is to address the crisis, to hopefully slow down the ever-rising cost of insurance and the rapid speed that Citizens Insurance is growing. The original bill, I'll give you the three or four big key points, would reduce the time to file a claim from 3 years to 2 years. In the original bill, we changed the base policy from roof replacement to ACV with the ability to the consumer to buy up for roof replacement. In the original bill, we also addressed the one-way attorney fees, very similar to the language that we did a couple years ago in the AOB language that was passed, and that is the bill, sir.
Okay. Members, any question on the bill? Okay, seeing none, Representative Rommel, you are recognized to explain the strike-all amendment.
Thank you, Chairman. And with the strike-all, after talking with stakeholders over the last couple weeks, the main differences in the bill, we kept the ability to file a claim to 2 years. We want to keep roof replacement as a base policy, and we're addressing some of the issues with Citizen. Citizen is a fastly growing company, about 3,000 policies per week. Right now, the only way you can go to Citizens, if you can't find property and casualty from another carrier, that is within 15% of the Citizen rate. We're going to raise that rate to 20%. Again, when Citizen grows, it definitely puts the state of Florida on the hook. And we're also going to address the wages that are paid to the executive Citizens right now. We're looking to make sure their maximum cap rate for an executive of Citizens is no greater than 150% of the director of OIR. And we are not touching the one-way attorney fees. That is the amendment, sir.
Okay. Members, are there any questions on the amendment? Representative Fetterhoff, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you. So I just have a question on the cap on salaries. You know, right now we're trying to decrease the number of policies that are going over to Citizens, and we need the best people possible in place over there as far as their expertise. And I'm just curious as to why we're trying to put a cap on their salaries when we're going to have a hard time hiring people to take on this big task. So just curious as to what your thinking is on that.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Representative. That's a great question. You know, sometimes when we serve the public, you know, even us as members of the Florida House, we get paid $29,000. The governor, I think, gets paid about $150,000. I think the director of IR gets about $180,000. You know, there is a compassion to give back to society, and we want to make sure that these government agencies, you know, aren't just areas for big paydays for individuals.
Okay, Ranking Member Wilhite, and then after Ranking Member Wilhite, Representative Driscoll. Ranking Member, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Representative. I just have a question. So the two-year window that's talked about in this, it seems like after a lot of the major hurricanes even or anything that natural thing that happens, it takes a while for insurance companies and adjusters to come out and do these things. Or if you have a water problem and you identify a problem, or you wait till a year and 11 months to file that claim, and when your contractor comes out, you start working, you're paid for your claim, and all of a sudden now you find some more unintended consequences, or if maybe some, as we've talked about in this, some building codes change or things, what happens to that homeowner or that insurer that now finds those things after that two-year mark?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Representative, for that question. You know, when I was originally looking at the bill, I looked at what most other states do. Most other states actually have a six-month window to file a claim. I know in Florida, since a lot of our residents are part-time, but I think 2 years is more than enough time to find out your claim. And then even I talked to most carriers. Again, we always, sometimes there's bad carriers. That's why we have, you know, some rules and regulations. But most carriers, if you file that claim on the 1 year, 11th month, 29th day, contractor comes out, looks at it, and if they find additional damages, most carriers do cover that anyway, even though it could be outside the parameters of the claim. But we do have to have an ending point. Right now, it's perpetual forever, and that's the reason we have extremely high rates.
Just one follow-up.
You're recognized for follow-up?
So if you're in the process, thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you're in the process and haven't been paid, would you still be able to add on those additional fees? Or if you were paid and you're in the process, you would be done at that two-year mark? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're recognized?
The bill has nothing to do when paid. It's when you have the time to file the claim. So if you actually file the claim on that last day before the second day, doesn't mean a contractor is going to be out there. The contractor, it could take 6 months to even get the contractor. It's file the claim.
Representative Driscoll, you're recognized for a question.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Good morning, Brett Rommel. Some questions about your amendment. Current law requires the insurance company to investigate and a claim and pay the undisputed amount within 90 days. I notice in your amendment there's a new 10-day pre-suit notice, but that 10-day pre-suit notice can't be filed until the insurer has made the determination of coverage. So with your amendment, wouldn't we really be talking about extending claims another 10 days beyond the 90 days that's already in statute?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. That's a great question. I guess you could look at it that way. Kind of like the cooling off period. In most cases, that 90-day gives the insurance company plenty of time to investigate, determine what coverage you have. And, you know, currently what happens, though, in many cases with, you know, some, we'll say, more aggressive plaintiff attorneys, the first time the insurance company finds anything about is the lawsuit. Okay.
Follow up. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So because the insurer can unilaterally require a mandatory appraisal, which doesn't have any deadlines that I see under the amendment, if I'm reading it correctly, isn't there potential for claims to take even longer for payment?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. I guess there's always a potential, but, you know, if you want to come to my office, you know, if the bill is adopted today, we have, you know, some days to come. But if you'd like to come and discuss that. And the idea is definitely not to extend the time a homeowner, you know, has to get repairs or paid.
You recognize for a follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then kind of picking up on something that Ranking Member Wilhite, I think, was asking questions in these vein. Thinking about hurricanes, and we have these catastrophic events that happen sometimes in Florida. You think about Hurricane Michael, which was a Cat 5. It's my understanding there's still over 1,000 claims, at least 1,000 claims that are open under Hurricane Michael, even though that happened years ago. So how would this new pre-suit notice and potential mandatory appraisal affect those homeowners and business owners with active claims?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. As far as I know, this doesn't affect, you know, current claims.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, seeing no more public testimony. Christopher Dawson, Florida Roofing and Sheet Metal Contractors Association. Proponent on the amendment. Amy Boggs, Florida Justice Association. Good morning, you're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Chair, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak about this bill. I'm the chair of the property insurance section of the Florida Justice Association. I'm a practitioner who is a policyholder advocate. I have had the pleasure of representing hundreds, I would say, of Hurricane Michael victims. I'm speaking in opposition to the amendment and the bill because we have a crisis of untimely payments and litigation that's being promulgated by insurance companies not adjusting claims properly and not timely paying their claims. I have clients who run the gambit from have a total loss, slab, many of them, and we're 2.5 years after the loss still trying to get a trial date to argue about what the wind damage was in this property that sat on Mexico Beach and is a total slab. You'll hear from Mr. Busby. Mr. Busby, the Senate will hear from him tomorrow. As 2.5 years after the loss, we went to appraisal in that case after we filed suit. State Farm underpaid that claim, underpaid it by about $100,000 or more. Mr. Busby is a working man. He is, you know what it takes to save $100,000 in order to make up for the shortfall that the insurance company has withheld from him for 2.5 years. My concern about this bill is that we're handing the insurance companies more tools in order to delay and deny claims. I appreciate the changes that have been made in the bill. However, we have a number of problems with this. The first issue relates to Section 8, the notice. Pre-suit notice is not a bad thing. In fact, right now, most of the policies and the law require that you give notice that there is a dispute. That procedure is working. I was asked by a senator, well, is it true that there are lawsuits filed and there hasn't even been a claim made? That's impossible. There has to be at least a claim made. The notice of the dispute, the problem that I have with that is it not just delays it an additional 10 days, but it gives the insurance company now fodder. When the homeowner has come to an attorney, it is because they have exhausted all of their remedies. I'm representing two surgeons over in Panama City, husband and wife. They have had problems with both their home and their business. They came to an attorney after exhausting all of their personal opportunities to try to get their claim done. To delay it not only another 10 days, but to give the carriers that opportunity now to go to appraisal, and the requirement here isn't even that they pay the notice amount. You know, the requirement here is that they just offer something. So their settlement offer is $20,000. That's what they paid on the claim. They get a demand for $100. Now they say, well, we'll pay you 10 more. Or they go to appraisal. And appraisal is not a bad thing, but once you've engaged an attorney, the homeowner's on the hook not only to pay for the attorney, but for the appraisal. And the appraisal can run thousands of dollars that go straight out of the homeowner's pocket and that they have to field. By the time the carrier has done their 90-day investigation and paid the claim, they have all the information really needed in order to go ahead and make a claim determination and make payment. The other issue that we have is relating to the reduction from 3 years to 2. What's the purpose of this? Again, I'm representing hundreds of homeowners who are begging to have their claim paid. Not only is this related to claims that are hurricane claims, which historically is what the statute required, but it's for any claim. Maybe I see that you should know that you have a claim. Right now in the law, by the way, there's a reasonable man standard. We look and we say, should the person have known? I'm not so worried about the hurricane claim. I'm thinking about the sinkhole victim that has a crack. 2 years later, they have another crack, and the carrier tries to predate this back and say, well, you knew 2 years ago that you had a crack. And trust me, those are the types of defenses that we get. With regard to the supplemental claims, the questions you asked were clearly on point with that. The answer to the question about whether a supplemental claim will be paid is no, I will tell you from experience. I've got homeowners, again, 2.5 years after the loss, that haven't even begun to rebuild because they haven't gotten all of their funds that they need. And so you understand a broader context. If a homeowner gets $30,000 for their total loss or their claim, their mortgage company's on that check. The mortgage company holds those funds and doles them out as they go. I've got a homeowner who the mortgage company right away said, you don't have enough to do the repairs to your property based on our own assessment. So we're not doling out anything until you get a contract to do all of the work. And so the idea that we can, so they haven't even begun, right? So 2.5 years after Hurricane Michael, even if you had a contractor, the idea that you could fit all of your supplemental claims in that 2-year period is just anathema. Go out to Panama City, go to Mexico Beach. People are furiously trying to rebuild, and they're not able to do that because of the lack of contractors and so forth. So I strenuously object to giving the insurance companies any more fodder, any more opportunity to delay or deny claims. Yesterday, I got a call from a client, total slab, taking her case to trial. She took out a loan and has rebuilt the property somewhere else. Guess what the next kick in the teeth is for her? She's not allowed to get insurance on her new property built at another location because the insurance underwriting guidelines now for Tower Hill and many others is that if she has an open claim, even on another property, she can't get insurance on this new property. That will feed, of course, now she's going to Citizens. That will feed that. So the idea that the insurance companies are going broke because of litigation and so forth is just not borne out by the actual evidence. When you look at the Hurricane Michael claims, it's not 1,000 claims that are still open. It's more like 8,000 that are still open. And that's using the classification that the carriers use.
Let's go ahead and bring this in for a landing, please.
I'm sorry. Thank you for indulging me. But they close claims and then call them closed, and that's what the 129,000 is. It doesn't reflect what's actually disputed. I appreciate the opportunity to address you. With respect to the notice requirement, can I also just say that it is so technical that a homeowner would be could never do all of the things in there on their own, and it's just meant, again, to delay. Does anyone have any questions?
Representative Driscoll, you recognize for a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Boggs. You kind of touched on some of the questions I had about hurricane claims, but I'm curious, I keep going back to this 10-day piece in the amendment now. Do you have a perspective on how the new 10-day pre-suit and appraisal would impact homeowners' claims and business owners with their hurricane claims?
Certainly.
You are recognized?
I'm sorry. Thank you. It is not just that it's a 10-day notice. You have to realize that with this, they've had 90 days to adjust the loss and often already have been put on notice with the insurance contractor and so forth. What this does is it gives them another opportunity after the homeowner now has gotten counsel at their wit's end, gives them another opportunity. And what is the corresponding obligation of the carrier? It's only to make a settlement offer. It's not to pay the demand. If it were to pay the demand, maybe, that's great. Either they pay the demand or you go into litigation. Instead, it's to make an offer and then go into appraisal potentially, which again delays and cause out-of-pocket expenses for the homeowner.
Thank you for your testimony. We appreciate you coming today.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we've got Stephen Richardson, Florida Justice Reform Institute.
That's it for the amendment?
Okay. Okay, that wraps up public testimony. Members, are there any debate on the amendment? Any debate on the amendment? Okay, seeing none. Representative Rommel, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm going to be pretty brief because I know this is just to adopt the amendment. I'm not pro-insurance company and anti-plaintiff attorney. We have some bad insurance companies out there that actually need encouragement or a little bit of pressure to make sure they file legitimate claims. But what I am is pro-Florida homeowners. Right now, homeowners insurance, depending on who your carrier is going up at 20 or 30% per year, per clip, every single one of your constituents. We have to remember, OIR sets rates. OIR determines whether or not an insurance company has enough capital to operate in time of a claim. The FJA just made a claim that insurance companies aren't going broke, which is totally untrue. We lost four carriers last year. We're probably going to lose another four this year because they're insolvent. Every time Citizen gets 100,000 new policies, and they're on track to gain over 150,000 policies, for every 100,000 new policies, it puts us, Florida, on the hook for $50 billion. They don't have $50 billion in the kitty to pay a catastrophic claim. It's a crisis, and we need to address it without giving the insurance company too much power, but we need to make sure that we can attract, you know, carriers to the state of Florida that want to do business here. And right now it's very difficult under the current legal environment. And with that, I close.
Okay. Thank you, Representative. Are there objections to the amendment? Okay, without objection, show the amendment adopted. Members, as the relating to clause of this bill has been amended, pursuant to Rule 7.11D, this bill is temporarily postponed without motion. Show the bill TP'd and available to be heard as a PCS at our next meeting.
Thank you, Chairman.
Representative. Members, we will now take up House Bill 1351. Money Services Businesses by Representative Aloupis. Representative, you are recognized to explain your bill before we take up the amendment.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, committee members. Members, HB 1351 is a bill related to money services business. Before I explain the bill, members, it's been 12 years since the creation of the first virtual currency, which was Bitcoin. And if you've read the news lately, you've realized that virtual currency has become ever more a real part of not only our society, but investments, banking, not only in this country, but across the world. There's been sort of a patchwork framework for regulatory structure across this country. And in our state, we've been somewhat silent on how virtual currency should be regulated. So what this bill seeks to do is to put into definitions in the Money Transmission Statute 560 definitions of virtual currency and change the definitions of money transmission, payment instrument seller as it relates to virtual currency. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Representative. Members, any questions on the bill? Ranking Member Wilhite, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative, for this bill. I understand where you're talking about and what people's most perception of virtual currency is, right? But to some extent, isn't almost all currency that we have right now to some extent virtual? I mean, I don't ever see a paycheck, right? When I pay my bills, I don't ever write a check. I just do things online. Things move around. The bank doesn't actually have all the money sitting in the vault. It's all done virtually. So isn't to some extent what we already do virtual banking?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative. Absolutely. Clearly, people are still using physical currency, fiat currency. I guess the difference between virtual currency and what we would say with our Bank of America or Wells Fargo account is that virtual currency typically exists or unilaterally exists on a distributed ledger. Right. There's no central entity, no regulating entity, and that's really what has been the crux of its growth over the last more than a decade. So. But to your point, yes, the vast majority of currency is currently virtual.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized for a follow-up.
And so, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So obviously you said it was 12 years ago that the first virtual currency, as we know, is Bitcoin, and there's been a lot of others created since then, Ethereum, Dogecoin, whatever, there's numerous ones. Isn't this where we're getting to the point where this was new and we're getting to the point where there is regulations and things will be protected and consumers will be more protected by putting things like this as we start to recognize that virtual currency is being utilized more and more and more, and some of the best parts is international transfers and stuff to do that. So isn't this an aspect of just starting to get things into the area where it should be regulated and protected?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, absolutely. This bill, as I said, this speaks to the silence that Florida has had on virtual currency. And I think to your point around consumer protection, beginning to understand how it should be regulated.
Any other questions on the bill? Representative Lupus, you're recognized to explain amendment number one.
All right, members. I apologize, the amendment is actually longer than the bill. It's not a strike all. But as you can tell, this is a very new area of law. And I want to personally thank Kurt Hammond, Meredith Hinshelwood, OFR, who have been extremely helpful in understanding how this now applies to Section 560. But what this amendment does, it clarifies that a money transmitter license is only required for an intermediary that has control over the currency. So to understand this, when you use your Venmo account, so if I Venmo Representative Smith $10, the money doesn't go directly from me to Representative Smith, it will go through a third-party intermediary. Virtual currency doesn't have to operate that way. It's all done through the blockchain. So you can legitimately have peer-to-peer transmission. So Representative Smith, but we can start sending money to each other. If you have any Bitcoin. But if Representative Smith has an unhosted wallet and I have an unhosted wallet, I can send him currency directly. So defining what it means to be an intermediary is important as we add these definitions to the statute. And that is the amendment.
Okay, thank you. Members, any questions on the amendment? Any questions on the amendment? Okay, no public testimony? Members, we are on debate on the amendment. Debate on the amendment. Any debate? Okay, seeing none. Representative Lupus, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
Chair, really quickly again, just want to acknowledge the incredible staff that you have in the Commerce silo. They've given me an enormous amount of time. This has been a bill that we've been working on for months now. And I just want to thank my fellow minor, Representative Wilhite, for his support as well. And with that, I close.
Okay, thank you. Are there objections to the amendment? Okay, without objection, show the amendment adopted. Members, we are now on questions on the bill as amended. Any questions on the bill as amended? Representative Hardy, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative, I have to commend you because this is an attempt to take what's been the Wild West in a way and clarify some of the issues that might lead to some trouble. I'm a little concerned about the fact that we appear to be treating virtual currency differently than other currencies. And I'm concerned about the fact that the treatment of virtual currencies would basically take away OFR's ability to regulate the kinds of transactions that were addressed in the Espinoza decision and to regulate them in a way that might protect consumers. I'm wondering, and this is a question. Help me understand why we would treat virtual currency the way that this bill would.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hart, you and I had a fantastic conversation yesterday, and I think you get the ethos of this bill. Regardless of what your personal beliefs are around virtual currency, I think there has to be an acknowledgement that Florida cannot remain silent. Representative Hardy referenced the Espinoza case, which is a reason why this bill is so important. The third DCA basically, and again, it's up for interpretation, but this is a conversation that you and I had, the Espinoza case sort of read in that there was no necessity for a third-party intermediary in the licensing of money transmission, so that peer-to-peer transmissions would need to be, individuals need to have MTLs, money transmission licenses. There have been, as you know, 64 petitions for declaratory statements issued to OFR asking for clarification. And because those have not been answered, and this has been conversations that we've had with OFR, this is what we believe is the right step to in terms of moving forward to make sure that there is clarity within the statute. Again, I think the best thing that we can do around consumer protection is to actually act, not to remain silent. And what this bill does, and again, if you were to go to Wyoming is already building crypto banks and things like that, which, again, in some ways, they're going to have those conversations with the SEC as to whether or not that's even possible. What this bill is saying is that it's acknowledging that virtual currency is a reality. It's writing it into the money transmission statutes. And, again, addressing, I think, not only the Espinoza case, but the fact that Florida, in spite of what's happened with virtual currency, has been silent on the issue.
You're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you. Has the OFR responded to those petitions?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not yet.
To the extent,
you're recognized for a follow-up.
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the extent that you can tell me, given that the Espinoza decision was a decision, the conversations that you've had with OFR, can you tell me why they haven't responded to the petitions on the basis of what they currently know the law to be?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to speak on behalf of OFR. I have to balance my own budget, but at home. But I think there are different interpretations of how Espinoza should be applied, whether or not it and again, this is a conversation that you and I had, but Representative Hardy and I had the conversation around, should two individuals interacting in money transmission require to be licensed in the event that one of the individuals is holding themselves out in sort of commerce activity? And again, there has not been an answer on it, and that's a conversation that, you know, we can have with OFR. But at this point, you know, my fundamental belief is that if it's our responsibility to act. And I do think that, you know, writing this into 560, ensuring that you know, we acknowledge that there is no third-party intermediary requirement, excuse me, there is a third-party intermediary requirement for money transmission, is the right step forward.
Any further questions? Members, any further questions? Okay. We're into public testimony. Russell Weigel, Office of Financial Regulation. My apologies if I butchered your last name. Waiving in support, thank you. Samuel Arms, Florida Blockchain Business Association. You are recognized.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Samuel Arms. I'm president of the Florida Blockchain Business Association. I just wanted to thank Representative Lupus and Meredith for the countless hours that they've talked with us about this bill. Industry is in heavy support of this bill. The unclearness around the Espinoza case and some of the language in this chapter has really kind of held industry back from moving into Florida. Really, in the United States, there's two places people want to be currently, Wyoming and Florida. But because of some of the ambiguities in the language, they've kind of held off on that. But if this bill gets passed, Florida is going to become a leader, if not the leader, in the space in the United States. Wyoming's too cold, even though their laws are great, and they naturally want to be here, as well as, you know, some of the initiatives that different cities are going on with, like, the mayor down in Miami and his initiatives pushing very blockchain and crypto-friendly policies to the industry. So in heavy support of the bill, I think it's great. I think the amendment's great as well, and just happy to be a resource for anyone who has any questions. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Okay, members, that concludes public testimony. Any debate on the bill as amended? Representative Wilhite.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, and to the Meredith and the staff for doing this. You know, it's been around, as you said, 12 years. The problem is in those 12 years, we've allowed the message to be that this is a problematic black money, you know, not legal system that it's been used. And you know, we've had cities like Riviera Beach in Palm Beach County that were held hostage on some of their stuff. And the perception is they were paid, the person was paid with Bitcoin because it was, nobody could trace it and all these different things. But, you know, you can buy Bitcoin right now. There's trading agents, companies right now that you can buy it on right now, or multiple aspects of digital currency. At the gas station by my house, there's a machine that you can go in and buy right now digital currency right there when you go in. So, you know, I think this is the right step because it's been around. And let's face it, members, I don't know if we realize this. There's millions and millions and hundreds of millions of dollars that are being made on these digital currencies. And we should be able to know more about that, regulate it, watch it, and see what it's there. And Florida has an obligation to protect everybody. And moving this step right, moving this step forward is the right direction to do. And I really applaud you for working on this. I know a lot of people don't understand even what it is or what's involved. And so you having the knowledge of it to be able to take this issue and take the lead and the charge on it is phenomenal. I really appreciate your work on doing this. I know that this will make Florida a much safer and consumer-protected place. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Members, any other debate? Representative Lupus, I want to, oh, I'm sorry, Representative Hardy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I recognize that there's a need to close some of the ambiguities around, well, you know what, let me rephrase. There's a need to put in place a framework that allows people who want to enter this space and engage in these kinds of transactions the ability to do so without incredibly onerous regulatory, you know, mandates on them. It's not clear to me, though, that creating a very useful fiction is the right way to do it. A currency is a thing that store value, unit of exchange, a medium of exchange, and Bitcoin, all these cryptocurrencies, they're mediums of exchange. It doesn't make sense to me to solve the problem by saying that for the purposes of this statute, we're going to take cryptocurrencies and pretend that they are not mediums of exchange. I'm concerned about that. I just can't get past that, unfortunately. So I don't know how you solve the problem. It's not clear to me, though, that this is the best way to solve it. And I think, given the fact that this is so new, given the fact that we don't know what we don't know about it, I'm concerned that folks could potentially be taken advantage of because of the lack of regulation in this space. And so at this time, I can't support the bill, but I certainly support the effort. The effort is a courageous one. I just can't support the bill at this time.
Members, any other debate? Any further debate? Representative Lupus, I want to thank you for bringing this good bill forward. Thank you for, you know, leading in this effort. Again, this is another example of our great state being a trailblazer when it comes to, you know, really sound public policy. So I appreciate your efforts here, and I know that you will continue to work on this good bill as it moves through the process. So with that, you recognize to close on your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I already closed on my bill during the amendment, which shows, you know, that I'm still sort of a freshman in this process. But I will say this, and Representative Hardy, you know, you and I will continue to have these conversations. I understand that there will be confusion on this issue because it is a very complicated issue. There's a reason why, you know, the amendment is longer than the bill, because these terms don't currently exist in Florida statute. Just because it's hard doesn't mean that we shouldn't try. And I think, you know, any suggestion that this is not an attempt to begin to provide clarity and regulation to this process, which is directly related to consumer protection, is fundamentally not true. And I do not think that Florida can sit back and allow this ecosystem to grow in the way that it is, with one of the currencies, Bitcoin, having market cap of over $1 trillion now. We cannot sit idly by and watch as other states implement regulatory structures and we just remain silent. So I fundamentally believe that this bill is about consumer protection. It is about understanding that we are moving into a new space where virtual currency, when these statutes were written, could never have been even imagined. So I understand these are sometimes complicated ideas for people to understand, and that's why I've had so many conversations with staff, because, to be honest with you, it's been difficult for me to understand at times, because it's a very complicated process. But with that, I ask, you know, I ask that as this bill moves forward, if this is something that you are interested in, concerns, support, please come see me, because I do think that this is an important important bill, and this industry is going to continue to grow, and Florida is going to need to be able to lead on it in a way that protects our consumers. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lupus, having closed on the bill, Ms. Kimberly, will you please call the roll?
Chair DeSegley?
Yes.
Vice Chair Haig?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby? Beltran?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Driscoll?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Hardy?
No.
Coster?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
C. Smith?
Yes.
D. Smith?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Zika?
Yes.
The bill passes, Mr. Chair.
Members, by your vote, House Bill 1351 will be reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Have a great day, committee.
Okay, members, we will now take up House Bill 415, Fire Department Communications, by Representative Botana. Representative, you are recognized to explain your bill before we take up the amendment.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for having me today, guys. The bill removes the word high-rise from the statute and requires local fire authorities to determine the radio signal for all buildings regardless of height. The bill extends the length of time for existing buildings to come into compliance 5 years to January 1 of 2027. That's the bill, sir.
Okay, members, any questions on the bill? Any questions on the bill? Ranking Member Wilhite, you have a question on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Recognized. I told you should have taken me off this committee because I had a lot of questions on the
bill. You owe me a dollar for every question, but that's okay. We'll figure that after session. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The intent of the bill, obviously, is to increase communication safety protocols and all those things to make sure not only our first responders, but the residents in those buildings are safer. What's the intent of extending the time frame out and giving more time to implement this?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Great question, Rep. The intent is so we can have communities and also municipalities come up to the knowing time to put these radio frequencies or, you know, repeaters in buildings so that they could be a little safer for fire departments, and that's why the extension is on there, sir.
Follow-up.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Where does the idea or your answer of four floors come into place? I mean, obviously, there's a lot of buildings in Florida, probably more in Florida than other states, that are less than four stories. Why pick four stories to be the deciding factor of where this bill would affect?
You're recognized.
I believe that's in the amendment, sir. That's not in the bill.
Okay, you're right.
Recognized for follow-up.
How will the cost of this be borne to do this? Is it going to be on new construction? Is it going to have to be retroed? Is it going to be based on the taxpayers, the occupants of those buildings? How will the cost be borne of this?
You're recognized.
That is a very good question, sir. We'll have to circle back with you and get back up with you to come up with a good answer for that. As far as what we're going on now in my municipality in Bonita Springs, we have a new high-rise that goes up. It's 27 stories. To put a repeater system in that building, it costs $400,000. It's a lot of money. So this fire department in Bonita Springs, and I know it's a lot different than other ones around, they actually have a system in the trucks that has repeaters already. So then instead of giving $400,000 to that system, they just make a donation or a contribution to the fire department to go from there. So there's going to be obviously different ways to do this, and that's in new construction. As far as existing construction, we'll have to circle back with you, sir.
Members, any questions on the bill? Any questions on the bill? Okay, Representative Botana, you are recognized to explain Amendment Number 1.
Thank you, Chair. Amendment Number 1 removes lines 25 through 27 and inserts in all high-rises, existing high-rises buildings, two-way radio communication enhanced systems may be used to comply with minimum radio signal strength requirements. However, two-way radio communication enhancement systems and similar systems shall not be required in apartments or buildings that are four stories less in height existing.
Members, we're in questions. Representative Hardy, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you. Representative Botana, can you tell me how this amendment pertaining to the four-story exemption came to be?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Rep. Thank you for the question. It came to my attention when I was talking to some fellow reps in rural areas, center of the state, with municipalities and their buildings also. It's going to cost them a lot of money to come up to that code. So we've come to a decision, you know, four stories seems like a compromise that we can work with, and that's where that came from. I don't want to put it on a burden of a smaller community. There's different communities all over Florida. You know, we're all very lucky where we live, but there's different situations, and that's why we put that in there.
You're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On that comment, so there's a concern that this applies not just then to new construction, but also to old construction if the concern is about coming up to code.
You recognize?
Yes, it's for existing and new construction.
Okay.
You recognize for a follow-up?
That's it. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm.
Members, any other questions on the amendment? Okay, public testimony on the amendment? No public testimony. Members, debate on the amendment. Any debate on the amendment? Representative Snyder, you're recognized for debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Rep. Botana. I know we've had numerous conversations on this. I just want to say thank you for this amendment. A large portion of my district is in Martin County, where we do have a four-story height moratorium on construction. And so I know that there is a significant amount of appreciation in the business community that this will save a significant amount of dollars because currently that's not an issue when it comes to signal strength. So thank you again for working on this and for bringing this great amendment forward.
Any further debate? Any further debate? Representative Hardy, you're recognized in debate.
I just want to say that I think the four-story thing is a step in the right direction. As someone who cares about affordable housing, a lot of what folks in the affordable housing space call NOAA, which is naturally occurring affordable housing, is stuff that's built to around four stories. It's stuff that you can build multifamily stuff without elevators, for example. And I think that if this requirement were applied to these residential structures in particular, under, you know, four stories and under, that would create problems, especially with them having to come up to code over time. I very much appreciate the amendment. It puts me in a more comfortable posture with respect to the bill.
Members, any further debate on the amendment? Representative Botana, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
Waive close, sir.
Okay, having waived close, are there objections to the amendment? Without objection, show the amendment adopted. Members, we are in questions on the bill as amended. Any questions on the bill as amended? Representative Wilhite? We're in public testimony on the bill as amended. Jim Milliken, Florida Fire Marshals Association. He waves in opposition. Thanks for coming here. Ray Colburn, Florida Fire Chiefs Association. Sir, you are recognized.
Thank
Welcome.
You. Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to address this bill this morning. Once again, my name is Ray Colburn. I'm Executive Director of the Florida Fire Chiefs Association. The key issue for the public safety community is that we always be able to communicate in all areas of the jurisdictions during emergency situations. These include SWAT team activities, search and rescues, fires, and medical emergencies. All disciplines rely on radio communications as a crucial component of a successful outcome. To include all buildings, we oppose the exclusion of any building or ownership type. We need to be able to communicate effectively in these buildings. We are concerned that further delaying the implementation of the radio strength provision will both endanger residents as well as first responders. The bill also contains language that we oppose, specifically exempting apartment buildings and buildings that are four stories or less in height. There are many areas, as stated here today, that communities have a restriction of four floors. So once again, we would be opposed to that. We believe that addressing four issues can be the key to resolving this issue. One, who is the authority having jurisdiction? Two, how can we assure that a certificate of occupancy is not delayed on a newly constructed facility? What can we do to minimize cost and when requiring retrofits and expenditures of boring holes in each level? And we've heard that this can cost as much as $100,000, mostly to labor-intensive work. And how the public safety community benefits from the enhancement of my building, would not be mine to be the building owner, if the radio strength is not adequate already outside the building. As such, we cannot support the bill as drafted, and we will continue to work with Representative Botano to arrive at a solution.
Representative Rayner, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, sir. I just for clarity, is your position due to the height or the delay? Can you just kind of really just kind of hammer that down for me?
You're recognized.
It's both. Basically, you know, this has already been in statute and it's going to push it down the road a little bit further. And also the height requirement of four stories or less, you know, we still have the same communication problems most of the time in those type of structures. So it's both.
You're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if this bill, in your opinion, and obviously it's speculative, but in your opinion, if this bill was passed as written, how would that affect you and what you do every day?
You're recognized.
Well, you know, once again, I represent the fire service in the state of Florida, the leadership of the fire service, and it varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction how it would affect. You know, when you look at the NOASH fatality reports on public safety on firefighters, you know, 80% of those fatalities occur, you know, directly or indirectly to failed communications. So it's very important to the public safety community to be able to communicate inside these buildings.
Representative Hardy, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What is the status quo with respect to requirements for these transmitters?
You're recognized.
The status quo by code is that they come up to code to be able to ensure communications within the structure. Now, there's also, it was mentioned earlier by the bill sponsor that there are portable repeaters that some departments have in their units, and that they can use a talk around channel to have that communication. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always work. And the more times that you have those on the scene, then there becomes interference and the communication just goes away.
Follow up, you recognize.
Let me be a little more direct. So you don't see this as an improvement to any degree on the status quo?
You're recognized?
No, I do not.
Okay.
You're recognized.
You talked about portable repeaters. And the fact that that's an option. And Representative Botana mentioned that as well, that this developer might have to make a donation to the fire department to pay for that. So, you know, I just want to get clear. There is a way for, you know, these signals to be, you know, repeated and strengthened to make sure that communication is there that does not involve retrofitting a building or putting it into the building itself. This is something that fire departments can handle. This is equipment that fire departments can purchase and use without the cooperation of a business owner or without their expenditure.
You're recognized.
That is correct.
Representative Robinson, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, sir, for your testimony. And I want to kind of circle back to a question from Representative Rayner, specifically kind of on the amendment and drilling down on the four-story deal. Help me understand why that doesn't help you all achieve the mission of public safety. I just don't understand the height issue or what is the main issue from a public safety standpoint, just because I'm not in this field. And I would really appreciate kind of your comments around that, sir.
You're recognized.
You know, it's not so much the height of the building. It's a lot about the construction of the building and how that building is constructed. You know, more and more in the state of Florida, when you start looking at building design and building construction and hurricane proofing and, you know, the building material itself, it comes into play. You just have those opportunities to be able to communicate or penetrate the building based upon construction.
Sir, thank you for your testimony this morning. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
Okay, that concludes our public testimony. Members, we are in debate on the bill. Representative Hardy, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that the bill strikes a balance. We want our first responders to be safe when they show up to the scene and they have to do their jobs. But we also can't put in place regulations that ultimately will be passed on to the consumer, who in this case would be renters, condo owners or whoever. And when you have two competing objectives, which is keeping costs down for renters or condo owners and making sure that firefighters can do their job safely, the good thing to do is strike a compromise. I think that was the purpose of the amendment. The amendment has been adopted into the bill. To basically say that we can't support the bill because it doesn't go all the way is to, you know, in my opinion, put the perfect ahead of the good. And I think that you might take issue about what the perfect means here. The fact of the matter is those $400,000 with that development that Rep. Botana mentioned, that's going to be paid by somebody, and it ain't going to be the developer. And so, you know, I would just caution us not to impose needlessly an additional cost on renters and condo owners when, as it has been stated, this is an expenditure that could be made independent of the property owners. This is something that fire departments can themselves just purchase with the money that they have in their budget. And so given that that's available to them and that it can be used in the buildings that are exempted here, I don't see a reason not to support this bill. I think it's a great bill. It's a nonpartisan compromise. Everything about what's good of the legislative process is present in this bill, and I appreciate it.
Members, any further debate? Representative, Ranking Member Wilhite, you're recognized in debate.
I think I'm up to $6 so far, Mr. Chairman.
Eight,
is it? Okay. Will it be nine if I mention the First Amendment Foundation? All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And members, you know, when it comes to these issues, I don't even say they're nonpartisan. They aren't partisan. Party has no idea place when it comes to emergency services. We don't ask what party you are. We don't ask any of that when we're responding to you to protect you. You know, again, we have to strike a balance here where we talk about things between our first responders, and we can't put a price on anyone's life, and we certainly can't put a price on any first responder's life. But we have to also understand that we have to strike a balance between the cost. And this issue came up when we talked about the fire sprinkler systems that's been going on in this legislature for years and years and years about the cost of doing this and retrofitting. And that's why I ask you about the retrofitting or new construction, and things are easier to move forward than they are to go back and retrofit on some of these older buildings. I ask you about the height, because a lot of buildings in Florida are less than four stories. But understanding also, I can go into a Publix right now, one story, and my radios don't work in it. Okay, so the four-story idea is a location, but it's not the answer to all of it. And I think this is its first stop, and I don't ever say that let's just move it along to move it along. It is its first stop. You've already started making amendments. You've already heard some concerns. You've already heard from the fire chiefs. You've heard from the fire marshals, you know, some concerns they have. I don't think saying no initially is the answer. But what I do know is that there's two issues that we have on fire scenes that happen on every single fire scene. There's concerns of water supply and communications. Those are the two things that happen on every emergency scene, at almost every, that could be problematic. And so in new construction in Florida, with the building construction process that we have, the safety things we put in with impact windows and more block and hardening and all those different things, we can have those communication problems at ground level in Florida. We know that the higher you get, the repeaters or the communications or the signals don't travel as well. So that's why above four stories, I would say probably someone in your bill that you're talking, you're concerned about. But I think this is a step in moving forward in talking about communicating, something that we have to start working on, because again, no first responder or no resident's life should be lost due to a lack of communications. And you know, Representative Hardy, you're right. The cost is not going to be borne by the builder or the construction company. They're going to be borne by the resident. But that's the cost of doing business, to being in the safest and having the best opportunities to protect your life as well. And hopefully we can do that on a larger scale that reduces the cost, obviously, because I don't want to have someone not be able to live in their house. So I think this is the right step moving forward. I think you bringing the discussion up And I know that you'll be open to talking about future amendments and other concerns that were heard today. And so I think it is the right thing to continue trying moving forward on this bill and have good communications. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Members, any further debate? Any further debate? Representative Botana, you are recognized to close on your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair. I look forward to working with everybody on the committee here to get this bill forward. That's it. Close.
Representative Botana, having closed on the bill, Ms. Kimberly, will you please call the roll?
Chair DeSegley?
Yes.
Vice Chair Haig?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby? Beltran?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Driscoll?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Hardy?
Yes.
Coster?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
C. Smith?
Yes.
D. Smith?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Zika?
Yes.
The bill passes, Mr. Chair.
Members, by your vote, House Bill 415 will be reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative. Good work. Okay, members, we will now take up House Bill 1209, Department of Financial Services, by Representative Fetterhoff. Representative, you are recognized to explain your bill before we take up the amendments.
Thank you, Chair. So House Bill 1209 is the Department of Financial Services Agency Bill for 2021, and I am happy to be presenting it to you today. This bill focuses on protecting Floridians from fraud, supporting our firefighters and law enforcement entities, and providing cleanup language for the department. Among other changes, this bill will clarify that it is unlawful to impersonate any of the DFS, Division of Investigative and Forensic Services officers, not just a subset, update the definition of a two-component explosive to remove outdated references, clarify statute to designate the Division of Public Assistance Fraud as a criminal justice agency. This designation was overlooked when the division transferred from FDLE to DFS in 2005. Strengthen protections for state agencies and universities within the DFS risk management program regarding protections for sexual harassment victims. Clarify continuing education requirements for insurance agents. Disallow insurance agents from sharing or being required to share proprietary information to property insurance underwriters. Allow the department to fight unlicensed activity in the funeral industry. Modify application requirements for funeral licensure, allows DFS risk management to provide a coverage line for firefighter cancer coverage of state agency firefighters, and will allow certified volunteer firefighters to continue to serve their communities while pursuing certification to become a regular or permanent firefighter. And while that is a brief synopsis of what this bill does, it does a lot of great things that I look forward to talking to you all about. Thank you. That is the bill, Chair.
Okay, thank you for that. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Any questions on the bill? Representative Fetterhoff, you are recognized to explain Amendment Number 1.
Amendment Number 1, Chair, makes some technical changes, including clarifying the provisions regarding DFS risk management coverage for firefighter cancer benefits are limited to those state agencies covered by the fund to avoid confusion, removes the definition of personal identifying information in the risk management sexual harassment section to ensure it does not conflict with public records statute, removes provisions of the bill that would have modified voting requirements for the Funeral and Cemetery Services Board, and the amendment removes licensure requirements that comprise Section 7 and 8 of the bill so that the department can workshop those provisions over the summer. In addition, we add provisions to help allow a prospective funeral director who has successfully completed all steps needed for licensure and who is interning to continue their internship until they receive final licensure and provide some cleanup language for pre-need contracts, and that is the amendment, Chair.
Okay, members, any questions on the amendment? Any questions on the amendment? Okay, public testimony on Amendment Number 1. Meredith Stanfield, Department of Financial Services. She waves in support. Georgia McEwen, Florida Cemetery Cremation and Funeral Association. She's waving in support from somewhere. Thank you. Okay, members, we are on debate on Amendment Number 1. Is it a debate on Amendment Number 1? Seeing none, Representative Fetterhoff, you recognize to close on Amendment Number 1.
Wave close.
Are there objections to the amendment? Without objection, show the amendment adopted. Representative Fetterhoff, you are now recognized to explain Amendment Number 2.
Thank you. Amendment number 2 makes technical changes, including clarifying provision of documents by insurance agents and better explains covered infractions influencing a fire safety inspector. These changes confirm the bill to the Senate companion as well as the amendment, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Any questions on amendment number 2? Questions on amendment number 2? I see that we have an amendment to the amendment by Representative Fabrizio. Representative Fabrizio, you are recognized to explain Amendment A2 to Amendment 2.
Thank you, Chair, and this I'll explain that this is a friendly amendment, and we've discussed it with DCF as well, and they find it to be a friendly amendment as well. The amendment adds the designation of Insurance Customer Service Representative, ICSR, from Statewide Insurance Agent Associates, LLC, to the list of designations that will qualify a person for licensure as an insurance agent's customer representative. And that is the amendment to the amendment.
Okay, thank you for that. Members, are there any questions of Representative Fabrizio on the amendment to the amendment? Okay, seeing none, any public testimony? No to public testimony. Members, we are in debate on the amendment to the amendment. Any debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Fabrizio, you are recognized to close on your amendment to the amendment.
Wave close.
Are there objections to the amendment? Without objection, show amendment A2 to amend to amendment 2 adopted. Let me say that one more time. Without objection, show amendment A2 to amendment 2 adopted. Members, we are back on Representative Federhoff's amendment 2 as amended. Any questions? Any public testimony? Meredith Stanfield, Department of Financial Services. She's waving in support with a thumbs up. Thank you. That concludes public testimony. Members, is there any debate on the amendment? Members, we're in debate. Okay, seeing none, Representative Federoff, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
Wave close, Chair.
Okay, any objections to the amendment? Without objection, show amendment 2 as amended, adopted. Representative Fabrizio, you are recognized to explain amendment number 3.
Thank you, Chair. Amendment 3 changes the qualification for a license or permit to install and maintain fire suppression equipment by requiring applicants to complete a training course that includes written and practical training that is specifically applicable to the class of license or permit sought. Additionally, the amendment allows training courses that are approved by the state fire marshal, regardless of whether such training courses are offered by the state fire college. Mr. Chair, that is the amendment.
Members, any questions on the amendment? Any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, no public testimony. Members, we are in debate on amendment number 3. Any debate on amendment number 3? Representative Fabrizio, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
Wave close.
Having waived close, are there any objections to the amendment? Without objection, show amendment 3 adopted. Members, we are back on the bill as amended. Are there any questions of the sponsor on the bill as amended? Okay, seeing none, public testimony. Meredith Stanfield, Department of Financial Services. Waiving in support, thank you very much. Ray Colburn, Florida Fire Chiefs Association, waiving in support. Thank you, sir. Eric Prutzman, Alarm Association of Florida, waiving in support. Thank you. And Jim Milliken, Florida Fire Marshals Association, waiving in support. Thank you, sir. Timothy Meenan, Florida Fire Sprinkler Association, waiving in support, thank you. Carl Rasmussen, National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors, waiving in support, thank you. William Stander, Florida Fire Equipment Dealers Association, waives in support. Georgia McEwen, Florida Cemetery Cremation and Funeral Association, waiving in support. And that concludes public testimony. Members, are there any debate on the bill? Members, any debate on the bill? Representative Wilhite, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I just have to say it's probably the one of the most exciting committees I've had been in to hear the word firefighter mentioned so much and talking about the benefits, protections, things to help our first responders that actually at their daily job and what will help them, let alone some of the benefits that are talked about in this bill. The firefighter cancer bill that was passed last year was such a tremendous thing for first responders. And it comes down to a part of this bill that talks about how the one-time payments will be made. And so it started to be addressed here from the state level, not just the local. And it really sets the trend of the position the state is looking for in attacking this issue of firefighter cancer. So I really appreciate the work that this good representative has done and appreciate thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Members, any further debate? Any further debate? Representative Fedoroff, you are recognized to close on your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair. And I, you know, it's not very often that you get to present a bill that both the first responders and the last responders support. So I appreciate your good vote on this bill. And thank you so much, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Representative Fedoroff, having closed on the bill, Ms. Kimberly, will you please call the roll?
Chair DeSigley?
Yes.
Vice Chair Haig?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby? Beltran?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Driscoll?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fedoroff?
Yes.
Hardy?
Yes.
Foster?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
C. Smith?
Yes.
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 D. Smith?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Zika?
Yes.
The bill passes, Mr. Chair.
Members, by your vote, House Bill 1209 will be reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative. Good
work.
Thank
you, Chair. Thank you.
Members, if there is no further business, that concludes our agenda for today's meeting. Representative Snyder moves, we rise, and without objection, the meeting is adjourned.